This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Well, hi everyone, and welcome back to Crosswires. It's James here, and this is the technology podcast. From now on, we have a technological variety show. I like it, the technological variety show. This week, we have a wonderful returning guest. I think three appearances at this point now.
Is it three?
Wow. Three, yeah. And in fact, it's nearly a year since your first appearance, because you joined us. So, look, folks, we're back with Gideon Mayhew from the Icon Factory. Thank you so much for being here once again.
Thanks for having me again.
Always a pleasure. So, the first time we talked to you was just around the time of the unmentionable incident with Twitter. Things have not gotten any better over there, have they?
It's so funny. I've talked about this a couple different times, and we all are starting to refer to him as the he who shall not be named or shall not be mentioned. And I love that myself. I personally like that a lot. So I'm fine with that.
I'd like that. I'd like the idea of comparing a certain Tesla owning. Yeah, he owns Tesla, so I suppose he is a Tesla owner, and boring gentleman as he who shall not be named. I think we can adopt that from this point forward on this show. There you go. I like it. Thank you. Now, so we talked obviously about the unfortunate incident, the X incident, as it shall now be referred to. And then, of course, earlier this year, you came back and you joined us for a wonderful discussion on the technology of Star Trek. Now, despite the episode title and what we're going to be talking about, this is not a Star Trek podcast. This is not a recap of the wonderful TNG episode Tapestry with John Delancey's Q. I mean, just gonna ask you, Jed, did you lose a fight with a Norsican?
Man, I love that episode. I did it. You know, I recently did a poll on Mastodon about their favorite Q. What's your favorite Q episode? And Tapestry was in there, and it got a lot of votes, actually. My personal favorite is Q Who, but
yes,
yeah, that's a good one.
Well, Q Who's the introduction of a Borg.
Yeah.
And I like it. I like how mysterious Guinan is in that episode. There's stuff we clearly still don't know about their relationship. But hey, this is not the topic of this episode.
Stay on target. Now we're mixing sci-fi metaphors. Oh, boy. You're gonna get letters about that, probably.
Use the force, Harry.
Yeah, I've got my Star Wars Tauntaun shirt on.
Love it. Love it. All right. So we're going to be, first of all, talking about something really quite exciting. But, I mean, where are we at this point? About 2 weeks in, if that?
Less than that. And, there's 28 days to go for the Kickstarter. So I think we had 35 total days.
So, wow, we are literally about a week into this. And So what we're talking about here is a new Kickstarter from the Icon Factory, Project Tapestry. Now, first thing I really want to ask you is, you guys have been around for a while. You've done a lot of apps. You do a lot of other things like icons and everything like that. Why a Kickstarter for a new app like this?
Well, I mean, we've done it before. We did it back in 2017 with Twitterific for the Mac, and it proved to be a really good model for how to develop a piece of software. It helps to reduce the risk, the financial risk. We're a small little company, and if we spent a year working on this app and then put it in the app store and no one liked it or didn't make enough, it could easily, you know, bankrupt us. And we needed to try to take some of that risk out of the equation. And Kickstarter served us in the past, and it looks like it's serving us again for Tapestry, which is great to get the project funded before the primary development begins. And also, too, to accept feature requests and things that people want in such an app, which is a great way, because we're not developing it in total secret, and everybody has a little bit of a say into it and all of those things.
Which is awesome, and I like that aspect. It adds a little bit of financial security, actually a lot of financial security for yourselves to be able to develop it. And I think there is, with Icon Factory, I don't think anyone's got this concern, but Kickstarters don't always have the best... What's the word? Trustworthiness. Reputation.
Yeah, reputation. Yeah, yeah. That's true. That, you know, depends on who's bringing it to you. But we've been there before, and we've not only Kickstarter, but we've been around for 25 years developing apps and doing what we do. So our reputation, I like to think, is pretty solid, and people can trust us to do what we promise and deliver on what we said we were going to deliver on.
Absolutely.
And I think it's going to work out well. I'm excited about it. We all are, awesome. Really.
And we are, at this point, seven days in and already funded, beyond funded at this point. Right. And I like that. Right. So before we talk about what the funding means, let's talk about what Tapestry is. Now, I love the description that you put onto the Kickstarter about how, you know, all our different feeds, be it, you know, our RSS feeds, our social networks, the good ones,
the good ones.
Images, you know, blogs, micro blogs, anything like that. We all have so many different ways, and maybe you've got 20 different browser tabs to monitor other things. Maybe you're using, you know, for blogs, you're probably using something like NetNewsWire or Reader or something along those lines. And it gets complicated. You need so many apps to keep up on stuff, right? So what's the idea then behind Tapestry?
I mean, the idea is to take all of those disparate feeds and sources and to weave them together into a single unified timeline on your iOS device so that you can chronologically keep track of what is posted from all these variety of places, whether it's a blog, a post on Mastodon or Blue Sky or NASA or a micro blog or your favorite, the YouTube channel that you subscribe to, that could even appear in your timeline. There's a whole range of possibilities there. And the intent is to make it a single place where you can keep track of these things and note what you have and haven't read, and also to try to keep track of what is popular and what people are posting a lot of, and what you want to pay attention to and what you don't want to pay attention to. And those parts are key, I think. And at least that's what we want to do. It depends on a lot of things, but there's going to be some technical hurdles, and of course we have to get to some stretch goals to do everything we want to do feature-wise in the application as well. But at the heart of it, that's what Tapestry is. It's a single timeline that you can filter or just scroll forward in time or back in time to pay attention to what you want to pay attention to at any given moment.
And the idea is it's completely within you, as in the user's control of what you see. Right. No algorithms, no content rating. And now, correct me if I'm wrong, at the moment, how's it going to work in terms of getting new feeds? How's that going to work to start with?
Well, ideally, we would love to have like a very simple browsing a database of sources that you can browse within Tapestry and add them into the app. The app will come with some predefined sources that you can turn on or add to your timeline at will. But you'll also be able to plug in sources of your own making or find a destination or an RSS feed and add them manually to the app. And then today we just posted details about the do-it-yourself nature of the API that Craig Hockenberry has been developing so that developers can create their own connectors if they want. If they have a really unique and niche kind of source or data feed that they want to put into Tapestry, they hopefully will be able to do it. If the data exists on the web in a public place, then you can probably build a connector for it and get it into Tapestry.
That's really awesome. Now, I've got to ask, is all the API documentation in all caps?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of things are in flux. There's so much stuff. We're just at the very beginning of all of this, and there's going to be a lot of interface challenges, to say the least, as we move forward. How to manage all of that data? How to keep users from feeling overwhelmed with all of that data? It could literally turn into a fire hose on your device. And how do you negate that? How do you manage that? Those are design challenges that I'm confident that can be solved. And we're up to the challenge of it. We did it to some degree with Twitterific, and we'll be doing it again with Tapestry.
And it's really interesting. I love the fact that you've been very realistic on a timescale. I mean, the delivery date on the Kickstarter is, what, December of 2024. So nearly a whole year to develop this thing and to get it right. And I think some of the higher tier pledges get you onto the regular test flight builds.
I mean, software doesn't grow on trees. It takes time to develop, it's just like anything else. And if you're going to do it, you've got to do it right. And it requires a lot of trial and error and feedback from users. And so it takes time and money. That's anyone who tells you that this stuff doesn't require money and time is selling you something. They really are. They're not giving you the full scoop. You know, it's either a hobby for them and they don't care about making money with it, or they're flushed with virtual, investor funds and they don't have a real return on what they're doing, or they're not emotionally or physically invested in that development. So we love what we do. And that hopefully that reflects in this Kickstarter and our other apps. I think it does.
It absolutely does, and everything. And just even the way we're talking and having a really honest discussion. This is for me the fact, and you've obviously been on a number of podcasts to promote Tapestry, but I mean personally, this is me speaking here. I love how open you are to come and talk and just give your honest views on what's going on now. At the moment, you've just passed, where are we? Yeah, you just passed the funded goal. Now, the next stretch goal is really interesting. I guess these are also in flux, where, we're looking at, what's on the Kickstarter right now, the $150,000 stretch goal is going to bring in muffling and muting. I guess the idea is that the more of these stretch goals you hit, the more you'll be able to add to the 1.0 release. Is that plan?
Yes. Right. Yeah. I mean, some of them are, we're adding them as goals to try to reach, but things are always in flux. There's nothing here that's fixed. So if priorities change, they can change, but the more money we can raise, the more likely it will be that we'll be able to hit more of these feature goals within the app. There's some things on that list that we want ourselves, like a macOS version.
Yeah.
That's like way up high on the list. There's different levels of that for a Mac app. Mm-hmm. There's, silicon versions, which are just right out of the box, a port of iOS, but that's not what we want. And that's not what people want. They want a native macOS app with all the bells and whistles and everything that's associated with it. And that requires more time and more money. So, it's a stretch goal and hopefully we'll get to it. I would really love to.
I'm really excited by that. And again, look, this is something we can talk about a little bit later on, maybe, is the difference between, you just said, talked about native Mac apps versus just running the iPhone or iPad version on Apple Silicon. So I do want to loop back to that. But one thing that you've made really clear in the Kickstarter, and you said just before, is that if the data's publicly accessible, now that doesn't mean that it's on a website somewhere that you can access. It means that it has to be a, and not, I want to be careful how we say this, there has to be a stable and reliable API.
an endpoint
for you to pick this up. Now,
right.
Obviously things like Mastodon of course, we've got Activity Pub. So really relatively easy. Now, one of the cool things, I mean, one of the things besides you mentioned that you won't be able to pull data from because there is no endpoint is Instagram. But do you know what great site that does? Exactly what Instagram does that is on Activity Pub, that is on the Fediverse, folks, PixelFed. I don't know if you've come, if you've used much of PixelFed instance yet.
I have not, no.
I love it. It is basically the Fediverse version of Instagram in much the same way that PeerTube is and should be more recognized is the Fediverse version of YouTube. I really wish we could, honestly, I wish we could host our own PeerTube instance for Crosswires. But folks, without getting too much into it, our Linode bill is big enough as it is here right now. You know, I'm sure you guys know all about that from all the work you've had to do with servers over the years. So we won't go too much into that. But one of the things you mentioned in the Kickstarter is comic books. Now, where is
web comics.
Now, yeah. Where is that something that's a passion of yours or is that part of the team?
Craig's. It's one of Craig's passions. He subscribes to a bunch of different web comics. So that, of course, was something that he wanted to build into Tapestry as having an ability for that. And I mean, there's no way that the tool can be everything to everyone. We don't want to try to be that, but the goal is to be as flexible and open as possible and giving developers the tools to create these connections themselves will allow them to think up ways to display the things that are important to them in their timeline.
I really like that. Yeah.
You know, hopefully that will come pass and everything will be, I mean, that's the point of it. So whether those endpoints will be shareable and how easily they will be browsable and how many of them, will there be 1,000 of them? Will there be 10,000 of them? We don't know that yet. And how popular it will be, we don't know that yet. So there's a lot of unknowns there, but the possibilities are open. And that's the part that's really exciting.
I think it's going to be a wonderful. Now, one thing I do want to just clear up, this is not intended to be a Mastodon client. You're not going to be posting from this. This is read only. This is your go to this place to find all the things you want to read, and then you'll go off elsewhere and interact with, you know, Mastodon, for example.
Yeah. The app will have a bevy of a list of your favorite apps. Like if you use Mastodon, then you'll use Ivory with it, or you'll use Mona app or something
else.
And Tapestry will hand off that post to that app and you'll be able to go and like it, reply to it, do all of the things that you would do if you were, you know, reading it in within the app in the first place. And so each content type or source type will have an associated app with it and you'll be able to do that. But Tapestry will be hopefully the place where you'll keep track of all of those things and it will remember your reading position. It'll know what you've looked at and what you haven't looked at, what you need to focus on and what not. And we'll go from there. This again is unknown. A prototype exists for it. Craig created a proof of concept for it, and it works, and it's pretty cool, but it's not in a state where a lot of these interactions can happen yet. So there's still unknowns about what's going to happen when you go to interact with these posts and how badly people are going to want to interact, favorite something or reply or what all of these things. We have plans in place. We have an idea of what we want to do. But we just have to get over the funding line so we can start working on it. That's what we really want to be able to do.
And also, and obviously, as we said, you are over that first hurdle in, you know, we're still 28 days to go. I'm really optimistic. I mean, obviously I mentioned pre-show, myself and Jay are going to be back in the project because we really are excited by what's going on. And I'd encourage you folks, because one of the cool things about Kickstarter, obviously there are some rewards. Now, let's go and have a quick look. Some of the rewards, I think there was one really high-end reward that I think has already gone, hasn't it, if I remember correctly?
Yeah. It's really crazy how quick those high-end ones went. The one red Ollie that we had left over from Twitterific, that was created by artist David Lanham, that is gone. And I knew it would be a good idea to keep that around from Twitterific days in case we ever needed it in sometime in the future. And it turned out that it was, that was a good idea. And we had a bunch of other Ollies left over from Twitterific that were also rewards. And those are, have all been snatched up too.
Yeah.
So we're probably going to come up with some other ideas for rewards, to add before the Kickstarter date comes around. So keep an eye on the project page. New things will be added, and we'll be talking about some other reward levels and things like that in the days ahead.
And even because this is one of the things I didn't realize you could do on Kickstarter. I don't know if it's changed since the last time I backed a project, is you can do a pledge without a reward. So if you want to support the team at Icon Factory with just a dollar, well, you can do that. But the first reward starts at $5 for the paper reward, which is a awesome digital wallpaper pack. Now, folks, these are the people who bring you Wallaroo. If you like any of the Wallaroo, I can never pronounce the app name properly. I'm sorry. Wallaroo. There you go. Then that reward by itself, I mean, is brilliant. You've also then got, you know, into the $25. That is the released app, right? Plus some backer only icons and a few other bits, and then you start going into number one. I have to be very, very honest with you, is the one I'm excited about, and I don't know why I'm so excited about this. It's the packet of Icon Factory stickers.
Stickers. So many people say that. Stickers are so wildly popular. I've heard that so many times. It's like, what I really want are the stickers. And then I'm going to have to get some stickers just up for sale after this somewhere for Icon Factory, because evidently people love stickers.
Well, I went to the Raspberry Pi store when I was going to buy Jay's pie for Christmas, and they sell packs of stickers. I think it's like £5 maybe, and you get this huge pack of stickers. I put the ones that I wanted onto my ThinkPad, my like nerdy ThinkPad, my Linux ThinkPad, you know, because you've got to run Linux on a ThinkPad, right? It's the right thing to do. I left the rest on the table at my parents'. I came back, my nephew had taken most of them and applied them to his various devices. Like, well done.
I like candy to kids. Oh, yeah, right? The stickers.
I said to him, do you want some cross wire stickers? He's like, no, thanks. I'm good. It's like, he doesn't want anything. if I told him they were Jay's stickers, he'd be fine. My nephew has actually told me, folks, that he prefers Jay to me. This is my blood relation.
Anyway,
but stickers are very cool. So, folks, going back to Tapestry, it's going to be really exciting to see the development of this. And I'm really excited because I struggle with that problem. Trying to keep on top of all the sources and flipping between Mastodon, Apple News when Apple News works, NetNewsWire, and all the other sources. So really excited. Now, let's move on a little bit. But one thing I wanted to talk to you about, because, of course, your experience is you've done design, app design for so long, and trends change. I mean, if I said to you skeuomorphism, what would be your reaction as it stands today?
I lament the loss of it. I really do. I love when it was all the rage on iOS and having that tactile feel to app icons and user interfaces. I get why we moved away from that. I understand the design philosophy there to make things cleaner, but it's in many ways it's gone too far. There's not enough affordances, and things are not discoverable enough within user interfaces on the whole these days. And so things can be hidden, and they're not very easy to interact with or understand in many ways with modern user interface design. So there's a lot of pushback against that, you know. And
I think that's a really good point. I think we have gone too much of a less is more. But less then doesn't help you to understand how you should use an app, what you should do when you press a button. You know, I mean, one of the systems at work has a button that looks like it would do one thing, but does a completely other thing that we've been told we must not press because it will crash the server behind us. It's like, if there's a button that can crash the back end, why is it in the app, in the web interface? Oh, because we haven't removed it. Now, because I remember first iPad, you know, my first generation With a skeuomorphic design, a notes app with and my contacts with a little bits of leather and everything like and paper. And
right.
I will admit I do miss that. I miss that this is an app that now fair enough, it maybe got a little bit over the top in some cases.
Sure.
But what do you think makes what's the biggest mistake if you're looking at apps today? And I think we'll obviously be, you know, fairly careful how we say this. But if when we look at the multitude of apps, is there a almost like a cardinal sin that you think that designers are making that maybe if you could tell people to not make that mistake and maybe they'd actually listen, what do you think that would be?
That's a really good question. I mean, I make a lot of these mistakes as an app designer. So I have to remind myself to make features discoverable intentionally when I design apps. It's not always self-evident about how to do things. You want to build in, oftentimes I'm guilty of it. I was like, well, we can just make that a power feature. If you tap and hold on something, then something else will happen. But who's going to know to do that?
Right.
Unless they actually have a tutorial or a quick tip or something that pops up and says, tap and hold there. But then even then, like, do you remember that? How long does that stick with you? The whole shake your device to undo, that whole iOS paradigm, I think is like a big one that people do. Most people know that, or do they even know that they can tap and put their finger on the space bar in the keyboard in iOS and move the cursor around on the screen? That is a supremely helpful thing to know, to be able to insert your cursor anywhere in the compose field, but you have to know that you can do that. And it is not discoverable in the least.
It is not.
And so there should be ways to be able to do these things that are obvious and discoverable, and then you can add in shortcuts and power features and all of these things that those power users can become familiar with and love to use. But they can't just be the non-discoverable ways to do things. That's probably like my biggest pet peeve, I would say. Along with accessibility, apps that are not accessible, they don't support voiceover, they don't support dynamic type size, they have low contrast text in fields that make them hard to read, or teeny tiny type that's extremely hard to read, lots of blurs and surface effects that interfere with readability, those kinds of things. Those are all pet peeves of mine.
For a company who is so passionate about accessibility, or seem to be, can someone tell me why Apple just have let the publishers go free reign in Apple News?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. It probably comes down to economics and giving them control over their own content kinds of things. But I'm not familiar enough to be able to speak to it directly.
No. It's more of a, that's more of an open question, because it drives me crazy. I'm trying to read, you know, as you can tell, folks, I have really bad eyesight. I want to be able to read my news feeds. And, you know, fair play to, you know, obviously Twitterific had dynamic text. Fair play to, I find it somewhat ironic that we're now talking about, when we talk about Mastodon apps, where everyone's always talking about Ivory, which of course back in the day, it was, you know, yourselves and Tapbots, who were the, right, you know, in the red corner, in the blue corner, as it were. But,
right,
I will actually say one feature in Ivory on iOS that trips me up all the time: hidden gestures. Because there's a hidden gesture to change your color theme, but I accidentally change my color themes far too often.
Yeah, and we had a hidden gesture similar to that in Twitterific, that you would change from light to dark theme with a two-fingered swipe left or right on the screen, people, that was like one of the biggest support issues I would get from week to week. It was all of a sudden my Twitterific changed from light to dark and I didn't do anything. Well, they accidentally swipe with two fingers and changed it. And that was obviously not as good as it could have been. And there's no way to disable those gestures within Twitterific. So the only thing you could do is you swipe again and change it back. So you live and you learn as a designer when you do those things, and hopefully you don't make the same mistakes twice.
No, but and here's the thing as well. That was a feature. It's like, oh, this is a really cool thing to add. And for so many users, it will be helpful, a quick way to swipe. But I think sometimes, and I know that this is just the case in the world of tech, sometimes we don't always look at every scenario. And I think it's almost impossible to do that. You know, I know accessibility, for example. I know that we are trying to make sure that our website, you know, the Crosswires website is accessible. That in itself is a challenge. To make, right. You know, transcription for a podcast. That's hard.
Although, supposedly, that's gotten a lot easier now with that new feature in iOS that will transcribe podcasts for you.
So, yeah, Apple Podcasts. I have. This is really exciting. It's using a Whisper model. So, they are going to be transcribing. I think it's at server-side on Apple Podcasts rather than on-device. Because we as a podcaster can put your own transcript in. The challenge I have is that obviously with my strong Northern English accent, it doesn't always pick up
right. My
wording. And, you know,
right.
We do get transcripts from our hosting provider. Our Castos do free transcripts. We've also used Transcriptionist from Woozy Juice, and that does a great job. That's all on-device processing. But it still requires manual editing to make sure that, you know, the words we're saying sure. Are correct. And
sure. Both
me and Jay work full time. So accessibility is a something to really consider.
Isn't this something that like AI is supposed to help with? This seems like a place where AI would be like the natural fit. Doesn't it?
It does. It does, but where's it learning that data from? That's always my problem. Is where's it getting the data to train the model to pick up my, you know, my accent or things like that?
I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but it's like I don't need AI to design for me. I don't need to create imagery for me. I want it to answer technical support. I want it to do the mundane things that computers are supposed to be really good at doing and do them. Like this, like automatically describing an image that I'm about to post to Mastodon. That's a great use of AI, and it's come a long way. Things like that. Give me 10 synonyms for beautiful when I write, and I'll use that. Things like that. But we could do a whole thing about.
Oh, AI we are. We doing so much content. We got. I mean, we need to schedule it. One of the really scary things for me right now is the dangers of AI in education. We've in our family, mine and Jay's family, we've had an incident with someone nearly failing high school because they used ChatGPT for their final assignment. And they'd be, you know, that person's been very honest about that, but still, it's scary. And I mean, just as a side note, you've heard Tim Cook saying that Apple's generative AI features come in later this year.
Right.
Can we hope that that's all going to be on device and true to Apple's, at this point, seeming commitment to privacy and ethics?
One can hope. I sincerely hope so. That would be marvelous. Because, again, they're in a unique position to impose that kind of privacy on the AI industry. And where they go, others will probably follow. So we'll keep our fingers crossed. And I really do hope so. Apple, of course, is far from perfect. They make a lot of mistakes, and they learn like the rest of us. But they do come, I think, from a point of view and a perspective where they do value users' privacy. And hopefully, because AI needs it badly. And respecting the legal ramifications of content and sites, like you're saying, that you train on and all of those things. We're in the wild west, roughneck portion of the AI timeline right now. And it'd be interesting to see how it all shakes out.
I'm very interested. I mean, look, as you said, Apple are not perfect. And look, go back, folks, and listen to the discussion we had with Zach all about, you know, Android versus iOS. Apple aren't perfect. And I mean, I think I didn't want to get too much into this, but in a short sentence, and this is a challenge maybe, what's your take on the DMA, Apple's... I think a friend of mine called it cantankerous compliance with EU law.
Yeah, it's obvious that they're sticking to the letter and not the spirit of the law. And as a corporation, you probably can't blame them for that. They are a corporation. They are not a person. They have their shareholders at the highest level, that it all matters. The bottom line is what matters. So if they have to introduce these onerous compliances with the EU, then that's what they will do. They will see about how far they can get with it before they're rebuked and things have to change again. For the vast majority of developers, they're not going to change their terms. They're not going to adopt these new terms with Apple. And that's what Apple is counting on. That's what why they did it, obviously.
Because the new terms are so unattractive that it's a discouragement for most developers. Yeah, I get right. that. And I think this is a point I keep echoing. Apple are not your friends. Apple are a shareholder-owned company right. who have an obligation to make money for their shareholders.
Right.
And that, unfortunately, is possibly the biggest challenge in big tech right now, isn't it? But yeah. all these companies, you know, we're not, you know, it's very different. If I, for example, if I said to you, an icon factory, oh, okay, I think you're doing, and obviously I'm not saying this, but take an example, I think you're doing this wrong. Well, you can respond as a small company and say, actually, you know what? You're right. Let's change it.
Right.
Because it's your decision and it's only yourselves. I mean, how many are on the team now?
Seven. There's seven of us.
And privately yeah. owned? No, not a public?
No.
So privately owned company who get to make your decisions based on your beliefs and your values.
Yeah, I mean, and that's one of the reasons why we're doing Kickstarter for Tapestry, that so that we have the freedom to do what we want with the app. As with all of our apps, people ask, why don't you seek venture capital for this app? Why not do that? I'm sure somebody would pony up for it. Well, that's not a given, given the state of the technology and of the tech industry right now. Unless it has the word AI attached to it, I almost guarantee you, you're not going to get venture capital for it. Secondly, I don't want to. None of us want to do that, because as soon as you accept that money, as soon as you accept influence from outside sources, they, of course, want a return on their investment. They want to have a say in how things work, where it's getting introduced, where it's marketed, all of these things. And we don't want that. We have a vision for it. We always have with our apps. That's why we do what we do. We make apps primarily for ourselves. Linea was that way. Wallaroo is that way. Xscope was that way. All of these apps are things that we made because we wanted them. And then we say, okay, well, if we want it, maybe other people would want to use it. And we put it in a position where other people can try it out and pay us for it if they like it. And we go from there. Not Wall Street, not Silicon Valley.
And that brings another point, because when you talk bringing in VC, you said where it gets distributed. I've seen some truly great apps, but still are great apps, that got VC funding and had to, because of the VC agreements and all the pressure, had to build for platforms that they personally did not give a monkey's about.
Yep.
And I can yep. almost guarantee you, if let's swing back, say, 5 years when Twitterific was still a thing, and let's say you had accepted VC funding, we would have probably seen Twitterific for Android, because that's what they would have wanted. But
oh, sure. But for sure. But would that have made any money? I challenge you to say yes.
I don't think so. No.
I don't think so. And that's the point of venture capital. Now, it's all about making money. They have to have a return on their investment. So if you're getting money to make something, you better damn well make sure that you have a plan in order to return that investment to those who gave it to you in the first place. And if you don't, you're going to lose control of the thing. They're going to kick you out, and that'll be that. Yeah.
Game over. It's not your app anymore. And I think it's fair to say, correct me if I'm wrong, there are no Icon Factory apps for any non-Apple platforms.
No.
Because that's what you guys...
Because we don't own Android devices. We don't own Windows PCs. We don't use those devices. We make software that we ourselves want to use and will use. And so we use Apple products. We use iPhones, iPads, Macs, and Apple Watches, and hopefully Vision Pros.
I was going to say, is yours on the way? You
know? Yeah. I mean, with the whole jury is out on Vision Pro. Other people have asked me about that, and I haven't even tried one yet. I haven't even been able to go and try one yet. So I can't speak with any authority on Vision Pro.
All I can say with certainty is that this is something we covered on our coffee chat stream this week, is don't drive with a Vision Pro.
Don't cross the street with a Vision Pro. Like, right?
It's just... People seem to lose, like, you wouldn't walk out there with a PSVR. I mean, you couldn't anyway, but somehow the fact that this thing's got a battery seems to make it okay to just be absolute idiots with it. Now, I don't mind. Look, I have no problem. So once you use the Vision Pro on a plane, you know, fine. I mean, Marquez Brownlee made a really good point. If he's editing a video on the plane, well, first of all, he doesn't necessarily want odd stares from his seat neighbor. Why is he editing a video of himself doing something? But also, you get a much better experience. But there's a lot of interesting things I think Vision Pro could be good for. My biggest question is if it's going to come outside of the US, because Jay made me laugh. I have got it. So Jay said to me, she said, you know what? I'd love to try on a Vision Pro. She says, why don't we go to an Apple store when I come over in March? I'm like, slight problem with that. It's not here. She's like, oh, yeah. Mm. Now, that last point about only making apps for the platforms that you use and you love, I want to just ask maybe what some of the challenges you found, because obviously in your design and development career, you've seen the shift from Mac into iPhone, into iPad. What are the challenges of designing for, you know, I mean, as many developers like James Thompson of Peacock fame, for example, are designing for Vision Pro, we're starting to see a whole new platform. What, as a designer, what are the hardest things about picking up a new platform for a design aspect?
Well, for one of them is the money. If we were a big company, if we were Adobe, it wouldn't be no problem to go and pick up a dozen Vision Pros to do development and testing and design on. But for a small company like us, an investment of even two or three of those units is a significant amount of money. And of course, do you really want to design without being able to use it, without being able to test it yourself? Sure, you could do it in the simulator, and a lot of the devs who have released apps in the last week have done that. Is that acceptable? I would say probably yes, assuming that your app isn't overly complicated and doesn't have multiple interactions in spatial awareness and all of these things. But as soon as you step outside of the Mac window kind of world, you're going to want a Vision Pro to test on and to find problems with. And you can't anticipate a lot of the problems unless you actually test on the device. So that's one of the biggest challenges. When Twitterific for iPad came out, we got invited to Apple in secret, like a lot of other developers, to put Twitterific on the then unreleased iPad and test it and design for it. We spent a week there doing this for the iPad. And we did it actually for Apple Watch as well. When Apple Watch was first released, we went out to Apple and designed for the watch out there in Cupertino. And both of those experiences were great. Apple was really supportive, and it really gave us a leg up on developing for these new platforms. And I'm sure that all the people and developers who did that for Vision Pro experienced something very similar to that. we kind of made a judgment call and said, well, are there any one of our apps that we feel we really have to be on Vision Pro on day one? There just wasn't. So we're waiting to see how this all shakes out.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Obviously, I guess Tapestry is the only one. It obviously, it's not ready yet, but Tapestry is the only one I could personally could think of that makes sense for the Vision Pro. And I guess down the line, and of course, if it really, you know, when it, no, not if, when it releases,
when, yeah,
of course, you'll be able to run it on Vision Pro as an iPad or iPhone app. So,
right.
Which brings, so that's one, I like that aspect, but it isn't necessarily about the, you know, oh, let's just slap this together. It's, well, let's see how it works on real hardware. Let's see what actually using an iPad for this is. Because I think sometimes, and I've experienced this, iPhone apps are just get fatter on iPad are not a great experience at all.
Right.
And it's true on any platform. I don't know how much you can speak to this. When Apple are announcing a new phone, and I don't know if they've done this in a while, where the developer requirements for design elements, increased resolution. So, because I think this all started back in the Retina days, didn't it? Was that the 4S or the 4?
No. I don't remember.
I think that might have been before.
Good question.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
But you would have had to, because when Retina screens came in, which I think was before, yes, it was. The iPad 2 and the iPhone 4, if I remember correctly. You would have had to design separate assets to do, not separate, right, but I guess release two versions.
Right.
Do Apple give you enough of a heads up as a developer that might be happening? Or is it very much, oh, that means we're going to have to redesign our app again?
Often they do. Yeah, I'll never forget the day when I was sitting in Macworld. I think it was Macworld when Steve Jobs announced Mac OS X, and that was the day that icons went from being 32x32 pixels to 128x128 pixels and millions of colors and all of that. And as a designer, I had no warning about that at all. And I remember the sinking feeling in the pit of my stomach as I sat there and watched that and thought, wow, our business is over, because we had built a reputation on designing these pixel clicked 32x32 icons for software. And now all of a sudden they got an order of magnitude larger and more elaborate and realistic. And I went into this really depression for a little while until I realized what an opportunity it was. And then, of course, we adapted and made our reputation known for designing for Mac OS X, and we got really good at it and all of those things. So it really depends on how you take those changes. Do you roll with the punches? Do you reject them? Do you push back against them? Of course, having advanced notice is always great. And notably, that did not happen when he who shall not be named pulled the plug on Twitter.
No.
It, you know, just yanked the cord out and left a whole lot of developers and people in the lurch. So it's the antithesis of that and how badly it can go when there's no warning for things.
Right. And stuff being, you know, I'm sure, I mean, you know, if an entire device category got axed from Apple, well, hang on a second. But it is really interesting. I mean, and in terms of like the fidelity of design, because it's something that always intrigues me, is how, I'm trying to remember who it was. I think it was it CSS Edit who put a little TPS? Is it one of, I can't remember whose app it was, and it's really bad. I should remember this, but there's a reference to TPS reports hidden in the icon, but you'd only see it if you did a preview on the app. Does that, how intricate does design for apps have to be these days? What, I think of building scenes for Twitch. And I think, oh, well, no one's ever going to see that bit of detail, so I don't care. It's not that I don't care. It's a, is my time better spent getting that bit working? What's, is there an aspect of that with app design?
There's a good analogy there, which is for the longest time on Mac OS, icon designers, good ones, should have been responsible for designing hint sizes of the various of your app icon. If you have your app icon, you have the large, beautiful 512 or 1024 or 2048 version. But then there's also the other sizes that appear in the macOS Finder, in the Finder windows, like a 32 by 32 or 64, and even down to the 16 by 16 version. And for the longest time, we designed all of those hint sizes for icons manually because we wanted them to be crisp and clean and clear and all of those things. And we prided ourselves on that. And nowadays you don't even need to do that because the OS generates those sizes dynamically from the single base file. Is that better? Probably not for the user. Those things are blurrier. They're not as detailed, but you have to pick your battles. You have to decide where the bang for your buck needs to go. Is it pixel pushing these small hint sizes that almost no one will ever see? Or is it devoting your time and energy to accessibility issues and user interactions and making sure that the app is accessible and readable and legible and all of these things and easy to use and the onboarding is doing things correctly? So much has changed over the years when you design for apps, as it will continue to do so every single day. My job is always in flux. I'm always learning something new every single day, I swear.
And if I can ask, what are your, because this is something I don't think we talked, what are your go-to tools for designing? I mean, obviously, for measuring things, I'm going to assume you're going to use Xscope.
Right.
You know, unless yeah. we're about to drop a bombshell. But for it, because when I, again, this is me coming from a print, I want print and screen design. So, you know, Keynote, PowerPoint, this is my design lineage.
Right.
What are your go-to tools?
Well, I was trained on Photoshop and Illustrator, and that's what I've been using for the majority of my professional life. You also use Figma and other tools as well. We use those from time to time to do prototyping and things like that. I find myself going back to what I know often, which is Photoshop. There's always new tools that come along and people, why don't you use this? Go try to use this. If anything's going to get me to get off Photoshop, it's going to be their subscription model than anything else, because they, you know, it's just, it's like everything else these days, is they get you over the barrel. And that makes me want to learn new tools. I'll tell you that. But, yeah, we use our own tools. I use Linea to sketch concepts on my iPad. We use Slack to collaborate online. We use Xscope to measure and test accessibility, color blindness, all of those things. And then of course we create comps and give them to the programmers, and they create it in Swift or what's the app kit, all of those things.
Oh, app kit, so, yeah, know, Swift. Yeah. Yeah, no, I just about know this. I think that only comes from listening to from Marco and Casey on ATP enough to know a little bit about that. I'm not a developer. I wanted to learn, and I don't know what it was. I think I don't want to say got put off, but maybe my brain's just not wired that way. But it's really interesting you talk about, you know, the subscription with Adobe, because that's being very honest with you, one of the reasons I've moved away, because I was never, I'll be honest with you, for maybe about a year, I was a paying Adobe customer. Right. I had Creative Cloud. Previously, of course, I was one of those naughty, naughty people who maybe didn't pay Adobe anything for software, because it was pricey, right? It was.
Oh, yeah. It still is pricey. Yeah.
It was, well, and the subscription model locks you in. I've moved to Affinity's suite.
Right. A lot of people have, Affinity,
It's really good. It's, you know, if you look at our streams, you look at our Crosswires logo, any of the assets for Crosswires are designed in Affinity Designer. Some stuff in Affinity Photo if I need to do some photo work, you know, but that's what I've used. Now, as a final sort of quick discussion, because I know we could spend all day talking design, but yeah. Which is absolutely fine. For you, what, this is maybe a tough question to answer, but what for you gets you, what gives you that passion for design? What's that moment you think, oh my gosh, this looks great, or I've done something here? Is there a moment that you've had, or maybe some, you know, maybe some tales that you've had of just those joyful moments of seeing your work complete? Or I seem to remember Twitter for it being featured in many keynotes, the icon at least.
Yeah, there was a moment there in one of the keynote presentations where Twitterific is one of the app icons, and it's right over Tim's shoulder in the background, and this is a giant wall of app icons, and Ollie is sitting right there over his right shoulder, and that was a moment. I it was surreal and it was wonderful, and you don't ever expect that. Icon Factory apps have been in Apple keynotes more often than I would have ever thought. Linea has been there. Frensic was there. Twitterific multiple times. Phil Schiller showing off Twitterific back in the day. All of those things, which those things are great, you know, but they don't get me as excited really as solving problems. My favorite thing about doing design is solving those interaction and design and visual problems. There's a challenge there. There's a problem that has to be solved. How do we do it? How do we present this in a way where people are going to want to use it, or they find it fun to use or elegant? I have really, really enjoyed designing and working on Linea Sketch for the iPad. And one of the reasons is, I mean, I use it all the time, but it's just a joy to be able to create something that you know that other people are going to use in order to create. They're going to be able to use this thing that you have made to unlock a potential within themselves that maybe they didn't even know existed at the time. And they will always find ways to use your tools in ways that you never even thought would be used. And that in of itself is extremely gratifying and extremely satisfying. And I love it so much. That along with the accessibility nature of it, hearing from blind users or whoever saying, thank you for making your app accessible and something that I can use on a day-to-day basis. I have gotten a lot of those over the years, and I really am humbled by them. We all are. And it's really cements the nature of the importance of accessibility in your app. Because just because you think no one's going to use it doesn't mean that it's going to be the case. If it's accessible, then it can be used, yes, by other people that you may not think would want to use it or have a need for it. And it turns out that that's really super important. And as a developer, it's something that I think we should all just take pride in and celebrate, that we make our apps in such a way that they can be used by the widest possible audience. Those are the things that really keep me in this job and keep me doing what I'm doing. I really do love my job, and I'm gratified. We all are, that people are taken so well to Tapestry and funded it, and that we will get a chance to make this app. We really want to make it, and we want to be able to bring it to people and hopefully fulfill the promises that we have tried to create with Tapestry.
I can certainly speak for myself and Jabe. We're excited. And I think, you know, again, the openness of what's going to be sort of on the list. And this is not by any means vaporware. We Icon Factory folks have the trust and the respect of the Apple community. Well earned trust and respect, you know. And can I say, I am so thrilled that a year after the disaster of the Twitter incident, I'm still talking to you as a member of Icon Factory, but Icon Factory has not gone away.
there's absolutely no guarantee that was going to happen. Yeah, you know, Twitterific was our flagship app, and it made a lot of revenue for the Icon Factory. And having it unceremoniously killed and losing all of that revenue put everything on the table, really. It really did. And we're still struggling from it. You know, I'll be honest about it. It hurts to have that revenue from Twitterific gone. We haven't recouped that revenue yet, and hopefully Tapestry will help in that regard.
Because I assume Wallaroo is not at the same level. It's not.
No.
It's a great app, and it's a great service. But right. It's not something that everyone is going to pick up.
Right, exactly. And in convincing people to pay for a subscription for wallpapers for your device is a lot harder than staying in touch with your friends and whatever on social media. So it's a harder sell. And it's also more expensive. You know, every time we make a wallpaper for Wallaroo, there's time and money that has to go into that. So it doesn't just, the app just doesn't run itself. You know, wallpapers don't get spit out of the machine. We don't use AI to create them. We design and create them ourselves. And so that takes time and money. And, you know, we're still trying to get Wallaroo up to a place where it's self-sufficient revenue-wise.
And it is, you know, again, it's a challenge. And I think it, you know, obviously it hit yourselves hard. It hit a lot of, I can imagine a lot of small developers got hit harder than, you know, I mean, like, for example, the likes of, let's say Buffer or companies that had Twitter integrations.
Right.
Not their primary business model. They don't care.
Right.
Whereas it really hit yourselves. No, but I am genuinely thrilled. And Tapestry is an exciting, I also love the fact that your first social media app after Twitterific is not just Masterific. Oh, God. Oh, yeah. That. Please never call that bad. Masterific.
Yeah.
That's awful. Right.
Well, honestly, you know, I mean, we thought about it and we considered it, but to their credit, there are a lot of great Mastodon apps that are out there, and they flooded in as soon as Twitter was removed from the equation. And it would be very difficult to create a compelling Mastodon app that would be better than some of them that are out there right now. And honestly, I really just don't have it in me to try to compete with that right now. I did it for years with Twitterific and Tapbots, with Tweetbot, and it took a lot out of me. And I don't have the desire for that. And, why would you need it? I mean, like I said, there's so many great apps available for Mastodon right now. Lots to choose from.
And it goes to show what happens when you create a truly open API that is not disadvantaging developers.
Right.
Really is important to do that.
Which is what Twitter was back in the day.
Yes.
They had open APIs. They encouraged development for their platform. That's why there were so many Twitter third-party apps that were great. And then they threw that all away.
They really did. It, anyway, but folks, go back. I'll put a link in the show notes to Gideon's first episode with us, because I mean, I will be very honest. This is me speaking as a podcast host and producer. There was that moment when, because I reached out to Sean at first, and then he said, well, I'm not particularly in a place to talk about it, but here, let me point you towards Gideon. And it was, for me, it was a huge honor to have someone, you know, like yourself. I think there's been a few times where, I don't know if you people get this if you're not a podcast host, but when you get a guest that you would maybe never expect to get, there is a certain, like, I meant to have that guest come back two more times. I think I've never seen an email response faster than this one. Like, yeah, I'm up for it. Literally, I sent Gideon the scheduling link, and probably within less than a day, he'd already requested time on the calendar. And I think that was literally yesterday, wasn't it? I think. No. Yeah. It was yesterday that
you guys have been great. You really have been supportive, and we really appreciate that. We're such a small company, and we don't have the means to get beyond our little bubble in the social media world. We really need help to get the word out about what we do. And so I have to say thank you to you and the other podcasters and bloggers who help spread the word about our little corner of it. And so thanks, and thanks for having me back. I'm always up for coming back, especially if you talk Star Trek or science fiction or whatever. You know?
Oh, we could do a whole. Do you know? I really want to just do a spin-off show that is just random guests who I've had on this show come and talk about their favorite sci-fi. Because I know that me and you could spend hours talking about Babylon 5.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Love that. And I recently started watching Stargate SG-1. I never watched it back in the day, and I've been watching. I finished season one and partway through season two, and I'm loving it. And I was like, why didn't I watch this back when it came out 20 years ago or whatever? And I'm like, should have, because it's great. Everyone kept telling me on Mastodon it's awesome, and it is. So I've been really enjoying that.
I think what makes Stargate so good is that it is believable that could be happening. Obviously, we're ahead of it now, but when it almost felt like it was happening real time. It was set in our time with the complexities of the US government. Because
right.
You know, have you met?
I'm really enjoying that part.
Have you met Senator Kinsey yet?
Yes.
Ronnie Cox. I don't know how he does it. He plays an absolute git in everything he does.
He's awesome, man. He really is great. He was a jerkwad there in Star Trek Next Generation. Mm-hmm. And he, of course, on Stargate as the jerkwad. And he has a knack for that kind of role where he's just like, you just want to strangle him, you know. But a lot of times he's right about things, which is even more frustrating.
I think my favorite line out of Stargate for season one, SG-1, is the wonderful line from Amanda Tapping. It took us, what was it, so many years and so many million dollars to MacGyver this.
And you can literally, they cut to Richard Dean Anderson and you can literally see him roll his eyes. He's like, really? We're going to go there? I love those in-jokes on Stargate SG-1. I really enjoy
them. It is a great series. I won't spoil anything, but there's some even more wonderful in-jokes coming up in later series. And it mostly holds its form. Anyway, look, this is not... We will definitely have... I'm trying to think what could our next... The science of... The tech of... A certain side. We need to think about that. I will drop you an email and we'll figure out what our next tech sci-fi episode could be. final question for you. Are you excited for the potential that is Star Trek Legacy?
Yeah, I am. I am. I can't wait for the return of Strange New Worlds once again. That really has become my favorite Star Trek series. Also, Lower Decks. I adore Lower Decks. I really didn't think I would when it first came out. I was really skeptical about it, but it quickly grew on me like moss, and I love it. So, yeah, Legacy. Yeah.
I'm excited. Lower Decks has definitely grown into a point now where I'm watching the Unify network ads. And all I can picture is Brad Boimler promoting network gear.
Yeah, they did a great job with that series. They really do. You can tell that they all love Star Trek. Yes. The people who write that show and produce that show, they love Star Trek. And it shines through in every single scene.
And I think for me, final wrapping up thought, my favorite moment of the crossover, the Strange New Worlds crossover with Lower Decks.
Yeah.
Oh, is where
somehow managed to pull that off. I don't know how they pulled that off.
Incredible. There's one problem which I'll quickly mention before. But my favorite moment is the bit in, I think in, it's either in the ready room or the observation room on the Enterprise where Boimler just goes Riker.
Yeah, and he does the leg over onto the saddle. Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, Jonathan Frakes had no idea that was going to happen. He's there directing it.
Yeah.
But there's one problem with that crossover. Jack Quaid is actually quite tall. But in Lower Decks, Boimler's not.
Right.
So they had to figure out, that was my favorite. Anyway, Jed, where can people find more about the Icon Factory? Where can people find Project Tapestry to go and back it? And where can people find you?
The easiest thing to do is head to the Icon Factory website, which is iconfactory.com. And from there, we have links to our blog where we talk about Tapestry and the links to the Kickstarter itself. That's just the quickest way you can get to us is iconfactory.com online. And from there, I'm on Mastodon. I wish I could say I'm just at Gideon whatever on Mastodon, but I can't do that. That's like the one deficiency with Mastodon these days. So I can't give you like a super, super simple handle.
Because we set up our own instance. I know you guys did for Icon Factory, but
yes,
we set up our own instance. Our handle is still at cross.wires.social. It's not as rawly off the tongue, is it, as other services?
No. Doesn't. I'm Gideon M at mastodon.social.
There you go.
You can find me there.
Yeah, and we'll link everything in the show notes.
Yeah.
Gideon, it's been such a pleasure as always. Thank you so much for joining me. And best of luck. In fact, I don't even think you guys need luck at this point. Continued
we'll
success.
We'll take every bit we can get. So.
There we go. Got everything crossed. Yeah. There we go. Yep. All right. Thank you, folks, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening to this episode of Cross Wires. We hope you've enjoyed our discussion, and we'd love to hear your thoughts. So please drop us a note over to podcast@crosswires.net. Why not come and join our Discord community over at crosswires.net/Discord. We've got lots of text channels, we've even got voice channels, and we've got forum posts for every episode that we put out there. If you're a Mastodon, you can also follow us either by heading over to wires.social or just follow crossed@wires.social.
If you'd like to check out more of our content, head on over to crossedwires.net/YouTube for all our videos, and keep an eye on our Twitch channel at crossedwires.net/live for our upcoming streams.
If you like what you heard, please do drop a review in your podcast directory of choice. It really does help spread the word about the show.
And of course, if you can spare even the smallest amount of financial support, we'd be incredibly grateful. And you can support us at ko-fi.com/crossedwires. That is ko-fi.com/crossedwires.
Until next time, thanks for listening.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.